Welcome, travelers, to this chocolate-covered episode of The Venture Maidens. We are so happy to have you. Thank you all so much for being here, for leaving ratings, reviews, and telling your friends about the show. Before we dive in, I want to say thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our rad theme song, and to this week's sponsor, D&D Beyond. I'm not sure if y'all have ever tried to run D&D online, but it is hard to try and chat with your players, run a story, keep notes on your desk, type on a keyboard, balance D&D books in the middle of that, while wrapped up in a microphone, cords. Let's just say it is stressful beyond belief. Using D&D Beyond has allowed me to cut about 100 items from that process. Now all the monsters and items I want to use from game to game are already right there in nice little tabs. I can look up spells instantly, track hit points, and basically anything I need. Seriously, folks, if you run games digitally, you need to do yourself a favor and create an account with the number one Dungeons & Dragons online toolset. Just creating an account gets you immediate access to all the basic rules, and you can go from there purchasing whatever items you need for your games. So, go right now to D&D Beyond and stop yourself from being tangled in a microphone cord and tripping when you have to stretch to reach your monster manual. But, without further ado, let's jump into a recap of the past episode. Last time on Venture Maidens, our heroes intervened as the Green Knight broke the rules of the joust and began to attack Kristoff. They totally kicked his ass, and in the process, discovered that he was wearing some kind of magic amulet crafted by Duchess Jenilith. The Tsarina thanked them for their bravery and gifted the party a magic pair of fairy wings. Ravain found them and told them to pack their bags for the next teleport flight to North Point. And that's what happened! Alright, now, let's crunch in.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Our heroes are headed to North Point to investigate a drow incursion. Who is this newest member of the team? What is life like on the edge of the plains? What could the Dark Elves be digging for? Find out in episode 65, Due North.
Coconut. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to an episode of The Venture Maidens. Yay! As you can see, we are joined by a very special guest today. Say hi, Dan.
Hi, everybody. How are you?
They can't answer you, Dan. It's Zoom.
I know what it is.
But anyway, I am so, so excited to be here. We have been waiting to have Dan on the show for, I don't know, 8 months. We've been talking about it almost a year, I think, at this point. So he's finally here. And of course, we are all recently back from Gen Con, so we are definitely sort of pulling things together exhaustion-wise. I apologize in advance for my voice sounding like a ringwraith. I hope that works for you.
Got an ASMR thing going.
Come yeah, on. Very, no. Gather around. I will leave. I will fucking leave.
No, what?
I have misophonia. Oof. It makes me feel violent when I hear smacking or whispering.
I promise I will not lick my microphone.
Which makes me feel hypocritical because I know whenever you have to listen to our voices up close and personal in editing, I think about it and I'm like, I'm so sorry.
It's just chips and chips for days. But anyway, chips for days. Welcome to the Venture Maidens podcast. My name is Celeste Konowich and I will be your dungeon master. Dan, we'll have you go last, okay?
I was literally just wondering about that. I was like, I'm Brittany Quintero. I play Arnadella Othil, your moon elf warlock.
I'm Katie. I'm playing Farrah Valen, your tiefling sorceress.
I'm Nassim. I'm your human monk, Sayonur.
Yay!
And I'm Sage, and I will be your banging barbarian, Kara Brynhilda.
Yee!
Hi, I'm Dan, guest venture mandan, and do we want to say who I'm playing now, or do we want to hold off?
Let's hold off a bit. I mean, your name, your name is on the screen, but let's keep it.
That's fine.
Let's keep it a secret for now.
Okay. What does it mean? No one
I
knows.
I don't know. It's just words. But yes. So Dan, we will be getting to you in just a few moments, of course, on the show. But yeah, basically, that's where we're beginning today. All of that stuff had gone down with the Green Knight. You had managed to defeat him. The Tsarina was grateful, and had called off the rest of the tournament to deal with whoever set up this traitorous ruse that interrupted everything. So yeah, Rivain had approached you and said, well, this is great. Basically, this means that we can head to North Point tonight. So make any preparations you need, and then essentially he has access to a teleportation circle that will get you directly to North Point. So he had said that, said that he needed to go pack his bag, say a couple goodbyes, but for you all to meet him as soon as you were able.
This is totally out of the game, but do teleportation circles still operate the same way they did back in 3.5? Because I'm a little traumatized by those.
Oh, no. So this is teleportation circles are basically they're in well-established places. It takes a lot of time, effort, and money to make a teleportation circle. But once it's there, it's like, it's good.
Interesting.
So in like all the main like palaces or governmental buildings, there's usually going to be a teleportation circle so the Eladrin can get around the country very quickly. So they're actually a very stable form of travel.
Excellent.
And as a signal definitely that if Rivain has access to this, you know, he's high up on the food chain.
Yeah, the circles are like an anchor point for teleportation spells.
Yeah, essentially.
Right on, makes sense.
No, you don't need to be traumatized from all of the Celeste teleporting nonsense I put you through.
It's okay, I'm stronger for it.
So much puking.
Oh, yeah, you made us roll, like, constitution saves or something.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It's weird, man. Your atoms being torn apart. It's crazy.
And interdimensional travel. Anytime we went through, like, a portal or a gate or something, roll a constitution save. We're like, ugh.
I don't want a horf. I didn't eat specifically so I wouldn't.
YOLO! Anyway, is there anything you all would like to do before meeting up with Rivain and heading off to North Point? Just as a quick reminder, Kristoff is in a pretty bad way, but Isolde is now tending to him using her clerical abilities to make sure he doesn't die. Valerius is with them. Aaron and Gidget are sort of loitering around, like, not sure if you all need them or, like, if Kristoff and Isolde need them. They're on standby.
I say we drink.
I need to heal. I need to get back to
I know,
zero.
Is it possible for us to take a long rest?
Definitely. So, I mean, all of this was happening pretty early in the day, if you remember, and Rivain said, like, this evening he would be able to roll out. So you can absolutely sleep. Get a long rest. Some of you can sleep it off since some of you started drinking at 7 a.m.
Yes, precisely.
At this tournament. Yeah, so is that what the game plan is? Taking a little schnoozle?
Yeah, take a power nap.
Replenish
these spell spots back, shall we?
And then wake up and then drink.
Understood. I got the drinking part. Yeah, so you can definitely head back to your tents and sleep your 8 hours. So everybody, restore yourselves. You've got a whole army to fight, so sleep when you can.
Sawyer is dreaming about flying with the new wings and seeing all the pretty mountains and places and fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so last time we left off, Kara had the wings. Is there some kind of transfer?
Oh, yeah. So, Kara immediately seeing these wings would obviously be like, Sai, this is definitely your kind of thing. My feet like to be on the ground.
Wait, is this after we sleep or before we sleep?
Before.
Okay.
Like, on our way back to our tent.
You see her clenching her knees together. Trying to hold back the excitement. And she's like, oh my god, thank you. And she hugs you.
Kara hugs you back.
You can use them whenever you want, whenever you need them. I'll take good care of him.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, so you have to decide what the command word for these wings are. Okay. What is the word that activates them? If you want to think about it.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was about to say something really stupid.
Wings! Hot wings.
Hot wings.
Hot wings.
Buffalo sauce.
Hot wings engage.
You know, I'm not here to judge.
I'm all for it.
Yeah. All right. So you get the wings. You take your long rest. By the time you wake up, it's late into the afternoon. So that golden 4 to 5 sun is about to set. The main heat of the day has already passed. What's the plan?
I guess Farrah's gonna just go up and be like, has anybody checked in on Kristoff? Do we know how he's doing? Or should we go see him?
Oh yeah, we should definitely go see him.
All right. Then let's head out.
I imagine he's, like, asleep and knocked the fuck out.
Probably. We can draw a little mustache on him then.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, so you definitely make your way over towards his tent, and you do know that immediately that there are a bunch of people moving inside. It looks like both Isolde and Valerius are sitting in there. They are playing cards at a table. Kristoff, as you might have suspected, is totally passed out on his cot at this point.
I'm going up to Valerius and Isolde. So is he gonna be all right? Is he gonna make it?
He will be fine. He sustained a lot of injuries, though. I had to suspend some heavy hitters to get him back to where he is. Thank you for stepping in. I'm not sure what would have happened if you weren't there.
Oh, man, what do you make of that Green Knight? He was apparently fighting for Jelenith. Why wasn't he carrying a banner then? This seems all pretty strange.
Yeah, and immediately, like, as you say Jelenith, Isolde's face goes very, very cold, and, like, her brows, like, knit together, and she's like, Jelenith is an embarrassment to the nobility at large and to this country. Her little games endanger everyone around her. This was simply foolishness, and I hope she is appropriately punished.
How has your time with Sarina been? Have you been caught up to speed of what's going on?
Well, it has been good. It's been a long time since my cousin was willing to speak with me. I feel like that invitation, or even just casual acceptance, is a good thing.
Did she really buy that you and Kristoff were getting hitched?
She hasn't said anything directly. I don't know. It's been more of the, oh, come eat at the table, sit in the same circles. She's pretty inapproachable at large.
Fair. Oh my god, did you know that we saw Rem? Do you still talk to her? Do you know what she's up to?
She...
and then Kara, me, like, as, like, Isolde start,
is dumbfound, like, just staring, kind of jaw a little bit open, like, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I know it's still new.
What? And Valerius is behind you, like, with the cards, and he holds them up, kind of, in front of his mouth, like, lifting his eyebrows.
Yeah. She sent Rana to come tell us about the drow. So, and I think we've run into her a few times, maybe. I think a few times she saved our butts, but we don't, you know for sure, because she's the real sneaky type. But yeah. So I'll take that as a no.
Well, I clearly am no longer privy to what Rem does. All of this, all of her actions, I don't claim to understand what's happening with her. And she kind of looks down and she, like, twists her hands together in a very, like, uncomfortable gesture.
Lasalle feels very uncomfortable interjecting now, but she was like, you know, I was actually kind of thinking, did you know about, you know, the whole drow coming in and the fact that we're leaving and what's happening there?
She, again, just looks up and Valerius is like full, like, head in hand.
Guys, like, we're so good at this.
And then just as all of that's happening, Farrah holds up her mark in her hand and she's like, hi, I'm Farrah. I'm new.
As old as that, she's like, I don't, it's nice to meet you, Farrah. I am as old. Okay, so there are four of you now. Well, that's, good. I wish somebody would tell me anything around here. And she kind of, like, looks up at the sky, too. She's like, would have been nice to know. And what, I'm sorry, there's a
so we fill her in.
Yeah, and she waits, like, as you go through everything, and she, and, all right, and what's your plan now?
To head there with Ravain and his troops and try and give some support to the keep. They're vulnerable now with everyone out here.
Well, and she looks over at Valerius and, like, gives him, like, kind of an accusing glare, like, were you keeping all this from me? And he's, yeah, avoiding Argaeus completely. Well, I think Christoph has the partial truth of it. We can't accompany you with everyone, with all eyes on us, as it were. It's incredible that you convinced Ravain to even leave in the middle of this. If the drow really are involved, you leaving will certainly be noticed. So.
Well, considering that the Tsarina has been consorting with these drow, I think that'll also be noticed too.
It is strange, this situation with the drow and the Tsarina. They seem to be making overtures of peace, an earnest effort to wish to join the plains, and the Tsarina has listened to them. They've made it very clear that there are many of them just below the surface of this continent, and you have to understand that if there are as many as they keep implying, my cousin must talk peace with them. She must entertain their diplomatic overtures.
Yeah, but what do they get out of it? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. They claim to want our resources, our food, our education, our protection. There are many reasons to join a continent as powerful as ours. It is a delicate situation. So perhaps this is best if just you go and investigate what's really happening up there. And again, I don't pretend to know what Rem is up to anymore. I'm clearly estranged from that. But I believe in fate, and it seems that fate is pulling you all in this direction. We cannot ignore that.
Kara nods slowly.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really expect all of us to leave. I hope things go smoothly here. Let us know. If not, because, I mean, we're here to help you guys too.
I will watch over Christoph. He will be fine. Let me know if this really is on the scale you think it is. We're going to need everyone we can to face this threat. So go, find out anything at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Will do.
Salute.
And keep Ravain safe. He's a good person, just a fool.
Yeah, clearly got eyes for your cousin.
Like I said, a fool.
So shall we go hunt down Ravain?
Yeah.
Get going?
Sooner the better.
Pack our bags and head on out.
Going on a quest. Yeah, and you know exactly where to find him. He's been hanging out around his tent area. So as you approach, he's tucked away. You have to, like, poke your head into the tent. He's keeping things quiet. Most folks now are out celebrating. I mean, because the tournament is over, so there's a lot of people hanging out. Like, oh, what are we gonna do? So the streets are pretty wild right now with folks who started day drinking real early since they didn't have a spectacle to watch. So nobody really notices as you meet up with Ravain. And he turns to all of you and, well, are you ready to go?
I think so. Let's... we're packed up, right? We got everything we need. There's nothing else before we leave because I don't think it's going to be easy to come back.
Absolutely. No, I don't think so. If all of you wouldn't mind, and he offers you all a hand.
Hold hands.
Hold hands. Take my hand.
Okay. And as you do, you feel a surge of magical energy that passes by all of you. And, like, suddenly the scent of, like, pine needles come to your nose. And, like, this slight breeze moves through the room. A breeze that doesn't seem to come from anywhere. You're all still standing in this room now. But something about you feels lighter, easier. Like you could pass without people knowing you're there. And he says, ooh, we have to make our way to the main tent. There we'll be able to use the teleportation circle. It'd be best if we didn't draw attention to ourselves.
Ah, got it.
Mm-hmm. He has cast Pass Without Trace on all of you. Stay close. So let's go ahead and make some stealth checks. You all get plus 10 to that check.
Ooh.
Woo.
Thank God.
I'm feeling like my best monk self.
21.
It's so light and breezy, and it smells amazing. 21 for Kara?
No,
26
for me.
Aw, sneaky as hell.
Mm.
Wait a second.
Oh, wait, hold on. Sorry, I have disadvantage.
I got I was like, 32.
Oh, still a 26.
I got 36.
32.
Oh, wow, like the knight. You all.
Plus 10 is a lot.
Right, plus 10 is a shitload. That would have been 28.
Yep. Mm-mm-mm. So you all effortlessly move through the streets. As the citizens of this place, they're just partying, having a great time. Nobody notices you as you take those sharp turns between tents and wind your way towards this large center pavilion that's been built up to house where the Tsarina stays, all of her personal guards. The lords and ladies of the region are allowed to stay there. Mostly it's where all the nobles do their feasting and their, you know, their carousing. So you wind your way through this place, and luckily, no one pays attention to you. It's like eyes just kind of glance off of you as you move through. People are absorbed in either their cups or their papers as you move through to this one section of the tent. And you see that there are a couple, they look like acolytes. They're just sitting there in sort of these plain white robes, and they're just sort of like hanging out around the station. And as you step forward, one of them like stops drinking something and like scoots it behind his chair. He's like, oh, my lord, my lord Ravain. how can we help you today? And Ravain, don't worry. Don't let me interrupt your good time. We just need to use the circle to North Point. Quick trip. Oh, we didn't have anything authorized, my lord. And Ravain, like, just a quick trip. And the acolyte is like, okay, yeah, yep, all right. Everybody step into the circle. And you see that there is, like, this large sheet of marble has been, like, wheeled out here and, like, left in this area. And it is inlaid with gemstones and gold in these intricate patterns. Just this incredibly beautiful circle is laid out in front of you. Ooh. Well, everyone.
Traveling in style, man.
All right. Oh, yeah. And as you all step in, the other two acolytes, they all stand up and they are wielding staves and they all begin to tap on the edge rhythmically, activating the circle that flashes up in this blue and golden light. And you are gone.
Woo!
Unlike other forms of teleportation that you have experienced, some of you astral traveling, all kinds of stuff has been going on. This is probably the smoothest journey you've ever had. You blink and your situation is different. You find yourself standing in a very large stone room. All of the stone has this slightly reddish hue to it. Sort of interesting. You see that there are a couple of guards that are posted in this room. and one man in particular who is standing immediately in front of the circle here. And Dan, why don't you describe what that man looks like?
Okay. All right. So there's an Eladrin man standing there. He, being an elf, it's pretty much impossible to determine his age beyond he is an adult. He has that sort of timeless grace and beauty, although there is a very distinctive mar to that on his face. His skin is this kind of coppery reddish bronze. His hair looks like it is, it's sort of long and held back in a silver circlet, but the color of it is sort of complementary to his skin. It's a very dark brown with these metallic red streaks through it that looks almost like, leaves in autumn, or like, metal in firelight. He's wearing a loose kind of flowy light silk white overrobe with some black embroidery, and then some tighter, darker clothes on underneath, some sort of loose black breeches, knee-high boots, and there's a very slender blade sheathed at his hip. The left side of his face is a kind of twisted web of scars that crosses over his eye, and where his eye, left eye should be is actually a gemstone or glass bead of some sort, and it kind of gleams with this inner red light. And he sort of snaps to attention when you all appear, takes a step forward and says, "My lord, welcome home."
Yeah, and Ravain will step forward and be like, "Sathras, come on, come on, come on. It's good to see you." And he moves and he does like one of those man claps.
Sure, yeah. Sathras steps forward and gives him the opposite arm hug.
Yeah. Ravain has always been just a little bit too uncomfortable with formality.
He does crack a little bit of a half smile and then sort of sweeps his gaze over toward the other assembled folk there. His actual flesh eye, the iris is a strange bright orange and red flecked color. So he is very, I mean, they've been around Eladrin, right? They kind of know the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is very clearly in summer aspect right now.
Yeah, which is rare, since most of the Eladrin in this world aren't prescribed to the seasonal patterns. Think kind of a fourth edition. So Sathras is very interesting that he has this quality about him. So perhaps he's just a little bit more in tune with the Feywild. Totally cool in this world. Ravain turns to all of you. Well, these are the agents I promised. This is Sathras, my second in command. He basically runs everything here at North Point.
He gives kind of a bow, but with just his head, and kind of dips his eyes respectfully toward them.
Kara gives a very respectful military salute.
I give my bow.
Clearly respecting your rank.
Farrah just kind of mirrors his actions, trying to fit in with everyone.
Arnadel gives a proper elven greeting. But, like, in not in terms of, like, elfy. Just,
that's, you fist bump him?
Is that the proper elven greeting?
Do we do the handshake?
The secret handshake.
Like, saying you greet him in Elvish?
Yeah. Yeah, just
Or, like, speaking in Elvish?
Do they speak Elvish? No, they speak... they do. I thought it was something else.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah,
they also speak Sylvan.
Sylvan, that's right. Oh, yeah, she doesn't know Sylvan. She's just trying to be, like, super respectful in all that entails.
Then, after you greet him in Elvish, he'll sort of turn his attention to you, and he'll reply in Elvish and say, "Well met, and welcome, cousin."
Flourishing curtsy.
You have such a great look, by the way.
He just sort of, like, partially confused, looks over to Soya and nods his thanks.
Well, I hate to cut right to business, but that's sort of... why we're here. Let's walk and talk. And Ravain clearly begins moving towards, like, the council room that sits sort of at the heart of North Point. So as you all begin to move through the halls here, it's very clear to you that you are in a massive stone fortress of some kind. You begin to see, like, arrow slits that lead out of the walls around you. And when you look out, North Point itself is like a massive three-story kind of fortress, like think very old traditional castle, but again, made of this redstone. So you can see far below you are the walls, the defensible walls of this place with the grounds all surrounding you. But as you look out beyond, you see to the northwest, there are these mountains in the distance that are snow-capped. But between you and the mountains here, there's just like this desolate, almost tundra-like waste of just like cracked red earth that surrounds North Point in all of these directions. It is just absolutely in the middle of nowhere. And just very dry, warm air is filtering through these windows as you pass.
Oh my god, Kara is fangirling so hard, and she's like pointing out all these like architectural features of the building, like, and if you look over here, that's why they would construct it like this. So then she's like going on and on, and she sees like the mountains, and she's just like so overcome, and she's like, guys, I think I might never leave after we get this done. I want to retire here.
Oh, yeah, God. I mean, Ravain laughs. He's like, well, we are always looking for more soldiers. If that offer is serious, careful. Sathras might actually grab you.
He cracks a little bit of a smile and says, we can talk after this business is concluded.
And Ravain gives you like a little like eyebrow look, Kara. And as you wind through the familiar chambers of this fortress, you come to the Great Council Room, which resides on the second floor. It is a very large room, but also like has very, very thick doors, arrow perches. So essentially, if everything were to fall, this is the room that everybody would fall back to as that final stand. This is where the leaders would trap themselves and try to make a go of it. So there is this long, beautiful oaken table that resides in the center of this room here, and Ravain takes a seat at its head. So, I mean, you got my message, but what's been happening? What have you seen?
I did receive your message. I have done what I can to muster our defenses. The preparations are slow, but he kind of pauses for a moment, and he looks a little bit troubled. One company has arrived to offer their services.
Wonderful. Okay. All right.
The strange thing is they arrived almost immediately after your message was sent. I didn't have time to call for them. So they already knew of our need and the impending danger.
That's not suspicious at all.
They're called the Checkered Follies.
The Follies? I mean, okay. Then they're here.
They are here.
Huh. I know. I mean, I sent messages to all the usuals, but that's...
Their leader, Bishop, has been eagerly awaiting your return.
All right. Well, that's... I don't think at this point... Beggars can't be choosers. I will absolutely speak with him after this. How's morale? What's going on? I know down all the nights, and I couldn't bring them with me. Just we're trying to keep this as quiet as we possibly can.
There is some unrest, some murmuring. Nothing overt yet. I've managed to keep it quiet for the most part.
All right. Any drow sightings? I mean, from what we know, I mean, you all, and he looks towards you all, it was... we'll tell him.
And Sathras turns to them and his kind of delicately arched eyebrows lift just a little.
Yeah, and I tell you about I astral projected with one of our commanders or fellow Sorrow, members of Sisters of Sorrow, and we peeked in at the like hordes of drow pretty much underground uncovering a whole lot of earth and amassing something.
So, I mean, this must be happening clearly in the hills somewhere under the teeth, but I don't know what they could possibly be looking for in this area. And they haven't expressed any, they haven't attacked or anything?
Celeste, I assume we've had no actual contact with them?
Nope.
All right. I have tripled the night watches, and we've had no sign of them so far.
All right. Well, it sounds like right now we're just working with a lack of information at this point.
And a distinct lack of manpower.
Yes. All right. If I can call on all of you again. And he turns back towards all you maidens here. We need more information. You're the only one who has seen this place. If you could go and figure out what these drow are up to, what they want, gather any intel at this point, it would be much appreciated. Is this something you would be willing to do?
Absolutely. I mean, we want to know as much as we can as well. So we'll keep you in touch.
And of course, I will be sending Sathras. You will be going with them. There's no one I would trust more to have in whatever the situation may be.
As you would have it.
I don't know if it will be stealth or combat, whatever it may be, but he will guide you.
Excellent.
Well,
it seems we have half of a plan, at least. I will talk to this bishop, see what they have to offer, and, well, let's hope you all can figure something out before the drow make any sudden moves.
Do you want anyone to be a part of this with you?
I'm sorry, for talking to the troops, or?
No, the bishop.
What were they called? The Follies?
Checkered Follies.
Yeah. If you all want to go ahead and make checks to see if you know that spawns anything for you, a history check would be good.
One.
Kara smacks the rest of them and is like, hey, do you think Rem sent them?
I don't know, but I got a 23. Do I think Rem sent them?
All right, a 23 is pretty good. So you are new to the plains, but in your time here, you know, you've talked to people, you've met people, you've gathered some intel. The Checkered Follies is a name that you recognize. It is the name of a mercenary band? Sure. Big question mark there. More of a loose association, maybe is a better word, of people who find just the rules and the laws and the training of like traditional Eladrin magic in the plains just a little too constricting. So there are people who explore alternative ways of casting magics. A lot of bards, a lot of sorcerers, a lot of artificers, people who don't learn magic in school make up this organization. They are allowed to exist on the plains because they're sort of have like a silly reputation, for lack of a better word. Like,
no one takes them seriously.
They're constantly like, they put on like shows and perform. They're like one giant bard party that like wanders around. So not a ton is known about them. There's a lot of like silly tales, or they pop up a lot in like, if you're going to the theater, like they're the butt of a joke frequently. that's the sort of position they hold in the mythology of the plains.
You know what? It sounds like they just want to prove
my kind of people.
They just want to prove themselves, and I can respect that. So I share all of that with everyone.
Yeah. Oh, and their leader, they're probably the most interesting thing about them. Their leader, Bishop, is a self-proclaimed master of masks. And what that means is it is whispered, it is said that Bishop can look like anyone. And that no one has ever seen Bishop's true face.
That is a true power that is often underestimated. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Very nifty.
So yeah, that's what you know about them. And yeah, as you ask, like, oh, do you think Rem sent them? And Ravain is like, I really don't know this Rem character very well. If she did, I hope it's a good thing.
Well, it would be a good thing.
Do we have any like leads as to where to start this search for drow activity? Or are we just hiking? Because I didn't dress for that.
We have some small information. Several of our patrols have gone missing. I haven't had the forces to send out to search for them, but at least that gives us a few areas that we could check. I can draw up a map and have those routes and the last points of contact indicated on it.
Oh, excellent.
That is troubling. Yeah. Well, I mean, and clearly we're looking for somewhere this cavern could be located, so I would, yeah, suggest cutting towards the teeth and checking out those areas, seeing if we can find anything.
Very well.
Any resources we can offer, anything, it's at your disposal.
Can I make a nature on what the teeth are?
Sure. Yeah, or history, whichever.
Guidance. Plus 3.
Oh, okay. Well, 9.
Okay. We can do a very, very basic geography lesson, because I think you've at least seen the plains before. So, North Point is basically the furthest edge of civilization you can possibly get in the Empire of the Plains. It is a literal rock and a hard place of a situation. This fortress to the north, it borders on the Valyrian Reach, which imagine, so like the polar, like Arctic region where you're getting in just these icy wastelands. To the east, there were the borderlands where Bastard's Breach used to be, but is now a large body of water. To the southwest, there is the vast, vast, inhospitable Kronos Desert, which is just a hot, brutal, horrible place to be. And then to the west are the Teeth, which is this vast mountain range that extends and actually creates the whole western border between the plains and the rest of the world. So you've got mountains, you've got a big fuck you desert, you've got a big fuck you ice tundra, and then now you have just this like empty like ocean in a wasteland to the east. So that's why being sent to North Point is like social and political suicide. So when Ravaine was sent here and took up this post, he was basically like completely thrown out of Aladrin society.
Aww. It's like exile.
And people like Sathras, who are here and like running this military situation, like you are defending threats from every side.
Oh yes.
From the north, you have white dragons, you have frost giants. From the west, you have things crawling up from the Underdark. You have rocks, like, coming in and descending down. From the south, in the desert, there are tribes of, like, these wandering just humanoids that are always desperate for resources and water, constantly marauding. It's a really cool place.
Some people call it social political suicide. Kara calls it Barbie Dream House.
Barbie Dream House. Yep. Yep. So that's sort of like what you roughly know about North Point and where you currently are right now. So when he says the teeth, he means heading towards that mountain range up to the northwest. Yeah. So that is sort of your general trajectory.
All right. Well, let's head
wherever
out, then.
Wherever you think is the best place to start looking, Sathras.
All right, yeah. So I will gather whatever supplies I need for traveling and try to get as accurate a map of the area as I can, just in case, with the areas of missing patrols marked on it. And he suggests toward the teeth to match their sighting of the cavern. So that's the way we will look at heading.
And weirdly enough, all the areas, the patrol routes where people went missing, were very close to the base of the teeth. So when you're starting to move into those like hill lands before the mountains like really take off. Funny how that works.
Amazing. Oh.
Adventures, I didn't see you there. Welcome to Midroll. Thank you so much for listening today, and if you are enjoying this hot dish we're serving, we are always so thankful to those of you who support us on our Patreon. Especially now is a good time to join, now that Drop the Die is helping us out in creating bi-weekly magic items straight from the show for all you supporters. Now, not to be too forward here, but have you ever wanted to get a whiff of one of the maidens? Not like us, but like our characters. Maybe smell like one yourself? Well, good news! Now you can! In my Etsy shop, you can now purchase Venture Maiden soap bars. Each one is custom to one of the characters or our magical DM and stamped with the Sisters of Sorrow logo. Check out each of the scents and stay fresh with your own bar. You can find my shop at etsy.com/shop/lazymermaiden. And now for our sponsor! I think we can all agree that there's nothing quite like sitting down with your friends at a table playing a game of Dungeons and Dragons face to face. But anyone who's DM'd in person knows the struggle of having an idea for a combat map in your head and having a player question your last-minute doodle skills while you're trying to set the mood for an epic fight. It's not great. Instead, now you can wow yourself and your players by creating custom maps every time. 1985 Games has taken our stresses away by releasing their Kickstarter, Dungeoncraft. Dungeoncraft is a book filled with reversible city, dungeon, and wilderness terrain pieces. My favorite thing about this product is how quickly you can adapt to whatever craziness you and your players get into. Sorcerer casts fireball? Great! Flip your tiles over and your tents are now all set aflame. Rogue disengages and jumps into a nearby window to escape? Whatever! Give it a flip and now the player can see the interior of that building. With over 1,000+ terrain pieces, all sized to fit your 1x1 squared battle mats, the possibilities are endless. Dungeoncraft has already reached their stretch goals to include 2 sets of spell effects, but with your pledge, there's loads more content to be unlocked. For more info on Dungeoncraft and to pledge for your copy today, go to www.1985games.com. Well, that's it for today's mid-roll, and let's get back into it, shall we?
Yeah, and as you are going about your business, all of you, and kind of getting the lay of the land in North Point, coming from the courtyards down below, you just hear this continuous jangle of music and, like, horned instruments and, like, people singing and, like, carousing outside. And if you go and investigate it, there is basically, like, a carnival area that has been set up at this point. These bright, colorful patchwork tents have been unrolled, and you see people of all races and types playing on a million different instruments that are just situated around, and they've, like, unrolled rugs and brought pillows. And they've just made this whole camp for themselves, like, just inside the walls of the fortress. And you see all the dour-faced guards of North Point are just giving them a very wide berth, since they don't quite know what to do with all of these people here.
Oh my god, Kara sees, like, the colorful tents and everything, and she immediately has a flashback to Madame Fortuna, like, looking around for cages of birds, like, no!
Yeah, and you, wow. You see, as this is happening, you see there's a tabaxi that's, like, flipping these, juggling things. What are they? The pins. Juggling pins.
Oh, yeah, the pins, yeah.
Yeah.
You got there. You didn't need us.
You know, the stuff. Flipping the pins up in the air. And they turn towards you. They're like, hey. Hey, babe, you got a problem?
No.
Wait. And they're flipping the things, and they begin to do it really fast. And then they, like, sneak one of
them. She's trying to back off.
Yeah. And they're walking, like, slowly towards you, you know, like, when somebody on a street performer is like, all right, I got a mark here, like, walking in towards you. They pull something out of their pocket very quickly and never break the flow of mm-hmm. throwing the pins in the air. And they hand it out to you, and it's this big yellow carnation.
Aw. Say is enthralled.
Wow.
And for my next trick, I light them on fire.
Yeah! Wow!
Blows out his breath, and all of them light on fire, and he's just like, oh, hot, 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 like, as he's juggling.
Spectacular.
Amazing.
And he, like, puts a hip towards you, and you see there's an empty coin pouch.
Yeah.
I give him a gold.
thank you, kind and beautiful madam.
When you're right, you're right.
Kara just shakes her head and walks away.
I'll give him a gold piece for sure. Yeah, I give him a gold piece.
Luck will shine upon you this day. And he continues and wanders back off into the mix.
I hope we win and we get to hang out with all these people.
I would just really love to see him fight. I want to know what his moves are.
Oh, well, he caught himself on fire doing what he does for a living, so I'm not too hopeful.
It was on purpose.
It was all part of the act.
Absolutely.
Duped. Well, this is great, but people might be dying, so we need to focus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lead the way again.
Yep. So, yeah, Sothras just kind of stands off to the side watching all of this ensue as they check that out. And as soon as they're ready, he just kind of smiles just for a second and then turns and starts leading the way toward the teeth.
So polite.
So as you step out, and you don't go out like the big gates, you know, they only open those for the fancy supply wagons. You just go through the little pedestrian side gate here. And stretching out before you for miles and miles is the rocky wastelands leading towards the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the air is just so, so dry here. And when all of this is happening, now it's about 5-6 o'clock. So the heat is luckily beginning to die down. So this is actually moving towards the best time to travel. So you do have quite a distance to go to get to that area. The first spot where the patrols, the general route, is about 4-hour walk away from here.
All right, then we will set off in that direction, and Sathras will say, we would be wise to take shelter during the heat of the day and travel only at night.
Sounds like a plan. And if you ever need, you know, like a bird's eye view or whatever, you know, just whenever, if you just want to take a quick peek of what's ahead, I'm, like, happy to go up there. But, you know, it's no big deal.
This bitch can fly!
So does she obviously have big gleaming butterfly wings?
So what these are... They actually stay in a box. They're about a foot by a foot in like mm-hmm. a thin box and made out of stained glass. And are you wearing them right now?
No, probably not. They're probably in my bag of holding.
Yeah, so no obvious.
Okay. Then he'll just nod once and say, that's excellent to know that you have that capability. Is it something you can do at will, or is it something you must conserve?
Let's see about that.
Read your item.
She pulls out the instruction manual from the box.
Wait.
I'm reading the fine print in the glass.
So Saya is reading the instruction manual right now.
Ah, very good, very good.
With the wing.
There is no limitation on the wings. Ooh, but
shit. Oh, well then.
Okay, great.
So what's the plan? You have about 4 hours here. What's the marching order? Is anybody walking ahead? This is like a good old nature trek, something the Venture Maidens haven't done.
In a while. Much.
In a while.
If anyone is comfortable scouting ahead a short distance, that's fine. If not, perhaps may I suggest... Oh, well.
Asaya shoots her hand up.
Did you want me to go right now? And go right now.
As you wish.
Take me away. She like throws the wings into the air and says, take me away.
Okay. So the wings, you have to be wearing them. Okay. So you throw them in the air and glass lands on the ground.
I catch them
on the sand.
Okay, so you catch them. So do you want to put them on?
Yes.
So it looks very silly. It looks like those little child like Halloween wings when you put them on and they're glass and they're kind of like flapping at your back. And then...
Cute!
And then...
Wow.
Is take them away your word, your phrase?
Or be my wings.
Oh, fairy prince.
Be my wings?
Be my wings.
There it is. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so yeah, as you whisper that, describe what they transform into. You can pick your colors. You do whatever you want.
Ooh.
How flashy is this?
I imagine them more like dragonfly wings that kind of like unfurl Ooh. From the inside. And then they have a very, nice. They're like iridescent. Mm-hmm. Iridescent, a little bit translucent, and like turquoisey, mermaidy colors. And they shimmer, of
so
course.
Pretty.
Nice.
And so it's not quite sundown yet, right, Celeste? So there's still light? Okay.
And I lift off. Say, I'll be back in, I don't know. How fast do I travel in them? 60 feet?
Sorry, I muted for a bus and I was like, nah. Yeah, 60 feet for your fly speed. What's interesting is as you go ahead and take off into the air and you turn back to tell everyone that you got this, Sathras has disappeared.
Oh, yeah, that's weird.
And we just didn't notice while we were walking?
Oh, no. I mean, Arna, Delphara, and Kara can see Sathras.
What? Well, we wouldn't notice, right? We're just, like, walking, and we're like, so, blah, blah, blah.
No, he's fine. Yeah,
Farrah's just kicking rocks, and she's like, Kara, what's that rock? Kara, what's that rock? What's that?
As Saye takes off, Kara yells out to Saye, and don't try and help any ladies with dead husbands.
yeah, okay. Think I learned my lesson. Sathra? Where'd you go?
I haven't gone anywhere.
Whoa.
I'm right here.
You can hear him.
Okay, so that's freaking me out. I reach out to try and, like, touch your face. Well, I can't see you, but I believe you're there.
He'll just kind of, like, delicately grab her hand and, yes, I'm right here. I don't understand why you can't see me, but I'm here.
That's fucking weird.
And he'll kind of just like half step forward with one foot and draw a line in the dust with the toe of his boot. Shh.
Cool. Gotcha. Thank you. Anyway, I'll be back in like 10:15.
All right. That's the way you want to go. We will follow along after you.
Wonderful. See you guys in a bit.
Arnadel wants to do like an arcana check as to why.
Yeah, why?
There you go.
Ooh, sick. That's a lovely high-ass number. That's going to be a 26.
Okay. That's great. So these were made, so these are like fairy wings, right? This is some kind of a ladrin or fae artifact. Something you know about the fae, they're tricksy little people and like to play practical jokes. So perhaps this is some weird condition that they left or built into the wings. Like, yes, you can have the power of the fairy, but you can't see any fairies while you went.
That's funny. That's funny. So I can assume that it's fae that become invisible.
Yeah, or at least a ladrin.
Okay.
We don't know if it's all fae or you can't see Sathras. So.
But Arnadel doesn't vanish to it, right? So it's not just anyone with fae blood.
Right.
Okay, cool. Huh.
Interesting. She just kind of raises an eyebrow.
A threshold.
You need a certain concentration?
A blood quotient.
Yeah, a blood quantum. All right. So we'll follow along a decent distance back behind the fluttering Saye and make our way towards the teeth.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So Saye, while you're up there and you fly, how you feel? How do you feel up there?
Oh, the best I've ever felt. It's like the same amount of joy that she felt when Arnadel gave her some wings. And then I fucked things up that time. But keeping a keener eye to also pay attention to what's happening around me and not be totally distracted. And,
oh,
you know. We're learning.
Exactly. Exactly. It feels great, but I'm wary. I don't question at all why I couldn't see Sathra. I'm just kind of like, it's part of it, I guess. That's cool. Let's go.
Like fucking magic.
Yeah. So you all continue along in this formation. And it's about 2 hours in when suddenly, you know, or gradually this has been happening. The ground has become really unlevel. It's very flat around the area of North Keep, just so you could see in all directions. Like a good keep should. And as you move up now, the land is turning into hills and jagged bits. So, you know, you're having to move like up and around. So you're not just like climbing over these sharp rocks that are jutting out of the ground at different angles. So you're getting up to that higher elevation and the teeth are just looming up ahead in front of you. And Saye, it's at this point that you spot what looks like the ruins of a campsite. Probably about a 20-minute walk from here. Yeah, you're squinting your eyes. You can see it. It looks like, yeah, there were makeshift tents. Something in that area has caught your attention.
How high up am I right now?
I don't know. You tell me.
Okay. I imagine I was like, I don't know how tall, like,
in the clouds.
Oh, shit. That's high. No, I was thinking like a 6 or 7-story building.
Okay.
That's not that high either, though.
60, 70 feet up.
Let's make it like 120.
It's pretty high. It's you're feeling a little lightheaded.
Oh, okay.
From the altitude.
All right. Then if I see that, I'm going to come down and see if I see bodies this time.
Okay. Go ahead and give me a perception check.
Ew. 12.
Okay. From this vantage point, Doesn't look like there are any bodies around.
Okay.
It looks like sort of a mess, though. You see, like, the glint of a blade that's been discarded. Just, yeah. Signs of, yeah. It's not a nice, pristine campsite, let's just say. But no bodies.
Right. But I knew that some of their outposts had been hit, essentially.
You know that patrols have gone missing.
Oh, okay. How long has it been? Like, I've been flying for how long now that I came upon this?
2 hours.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So your party has been moving behind you the whole time. So they're, you could turn around and get back to them in, like, 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess if I'm not seeing anything, I'll just stay up ahead. They'll see it.
Okay. Yeah. You keep flying, just flying past it, or are you hovering over, like, this camp spot?
No, I'm gonna keep going ahead, but I'm looking in my peripherals.
Okay. So eventually, the rest of you, crest this now progressively steeper shelf, essentially made of rock, and you do see the remains of a campsite in front of you. Sathras, you would immediately recognize this as one of your patrols, spots. You recognize the tent, the equipment. It looks like, yeah, there was absolutely some kind of struggle here. The tents, the canvases have been torn, kicked over. You see discarded pots and pans that have been, like, scattered across the place. You see a couple standard issue weapons that have been left on the ground. Yeah.
All right. He'll move into the camp with just sort of a flat expression on his face, but his eyes are hard. And look for bodies or survivors, not really expecting to find any, but going through the motions anyway.
Ooh. Looking at, like, how much dust is on all the stuff and looking at, like, the campfire, can I try and, like, make a survival check to suss out, like, how old is this camp?
Yeah, so Sage, Kara should give me a survival check and Sathras give me an investigation check.
Survival, that is a 19.
I also have a 19.
Wow, y'all so good at looking at stuff. yeah, so Kara, you look at the remains of the fire in particular that helps kind of clue you in. These embers are long, long dead. Most of the ash has scattered in the slight breeze that floods through this area here. You would guess about 3 days, and which about lines up with Sathras, with your timeline.
All right.
As you are looking around at everything here, you do notice that there are some blood spatters on the ground. You also see there are a huge number of footprints in the area indicating a scuffle. Normally your troops have 6 people in the rotation. There are many, many more sets of tracks here. You also see that there are drag marks that lead sort of off into the area before the rock in the wind basically destroys those trails.
Got it.
Mm.
Yeah, 3-day trail, no help there. All right, so just after kind of a quick cursory glance through to see if there might be anything of use or any other useful information, doesn't look like there is, I'm ready to keep heading off.
Yeah,
definitely looks like your patrol was here. They skirmished with someone and some bodies were dragged off.
Can I do...
There's not enough blood here to indicate that somebody died here, which leads you to believe that maybe your troops are still alive somewhere.
I want to do an investigation check for any kind of, like, I don't know, telltale sign of what might be able to identify who attacked.
Sure.
Like...
Give me an investigation.
Stand by. That's a 13.
So Sathras is looking at the area and kind of surveying, like, everything going on in camp here. As you look around, like, sort of the outskirts, there are a couple of these, like, scraggly bushes that are, like, clinging to the edge of the cliff here. Like, that's the best you get out in this area, these, like, half-dead kind of brambles. And you notice that there's something that's attached to one of these brambles. And as you find it, it's this strip of cloth. That's black and has these silver threads woven through it.
It's not big enough for me to see, like, if the silver threads are, like, a particular embroidery or brocade or anything.
No, it looks like somebody made it caught just caught a piece of their clothing on the edge of this and ripped off.
All right, I grab.
It's nice. It's almost silk-like.
I grab it and I put it in my pocket. I'm assuming I have some kind of pocket. And
no pockets in Dungeons and Dragons. Unless you
not even Fantasyland.
Unless you have on your character sheet a pocket. Pockets.
So I run back and help with like the investigation, and then I kind of want to wait to like reveal that for some reason. I can't really explain why. It just feels intuitive. I'm just gonna keep it in my pocket till I feel like it's safe or pertinent, but. And that's over the edge of the cliff.
That's just sort of in the general vicinity. Area.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not at like full cliffs yet. You're just at like
okay. So it's not like it.
Like it's a pain in the ass to climb, but it's like just a pain in the ass. You know, it's not like oh god,
yeah, like sheer drop.
Do the drag marks continue in a definitive direction? Like, can we trail them?
Sort of more towards the direction you're going. But, like, this campsite was made on probably the flattest, nicest piece of ground they could find. So after that, it's just, like, it's rock and it's brambles and it's hard to tell.
Yeah, sweet. Here, well, we go off in that general direction, I assume.
Yeah. Saye, as you're flying ahead of everyone, go ahead and make me a perception check.
Do-do-do-do. Let's perceive. Wow, I shouldn't really have gone ahead. That was a 6.
Okay.
You're still getting
me. So you don't perceive immediately as this happens. So you continue, all of you, moving forward for about another hour or so. And you are full on, like, in the foothills of these mountains now, at the point where you're having to wind and pick your way through these cliffs. And Saye, as you drift immediately, like over one of these ridges, you see suddenly this large bowl in the ground opens up there. And you see that there is the mouth to a cave. That what catches your attention is on either side of this entrance, there are braziers filled with this like purple and green flickering fire. And you see that there are people that are moving just in front of this cave entrance here. You see they are small, squat individuals that look sort of like Kara, except they have these, like, this grayish complexion to them. And, like, they're, like, hunched down to their tasks here. And you see that they are carting these large, just, like, troughs full of, like, ore and, like, dirt. And they are exiting the cave here, and they seem to be dumping it out in these large piles on the outside. You see there are about 6 of them here. And so go ahead and make me a acrobatics or a stealth check or something to see if you can, like, full reverse.
14?
Okay, let me roll some perception, shall I? Okay, so as you come over this ridge with your beautiful dragonfly wings that just catch the purple and green of this fairy fire just oh so lovingly, one of these creatures looks up, like, towards you at the sky and, like, points at you and, like, taps the others. You don't speak Dwarven, do you?
No.
Okay. Taps the other one and, like, says something, like, to his buddy. And they all kind of nod and, like, look up at you for a moment and then continue dumping out the rest of their dirt and, like, turn around and, like, walk back into the cave. Not, like, seeming in a hurry or... They just walk back into that cave.
Nice. I'm going to hover for a moment and just, I don't know, go up slowly.
Like, fly casual.
Yeah, just make myself scarce and not obviously a person in the sky.
Sure. You wrap yourselves in clouds.
Just to see if they continue with their job dumping things out and moving on with their life and forgetting about me.
Sure. So I'm going to say you what, spend about 10 minutes doing this?
Yeah.
Okay, so the rest of your party crests, like, over. You can see them coming now. And if you don't intervene, they're just going to walk right into this bowl.
Okay, well, as they start approaching, I'll descend down and stop them before they get to the top.
Yeah, in that 10 minutes, you have not seen anyone else come in or out of this cave.
Ooh, okay. All right, guys, shh. I'm, like, shushing you guys as I descend into the ground, and then I will say, be my wings once more to put things away so I can see Sothras, And
yeah, and that sense of like light air just goes away as they like shrink and they kind of like shrivel down, and you hear like this like crunching sound as they become glass once again, just like flapping uselessly like on your back.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, so I'm pretty sure there's like a little opening, a little dugout of those drow miners right over this crest. They might have seen me. They did see me.
They might have. Soye would know that what you saw, those were not drow.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if I'd know that.
You definitely know what drow look like. Drow look like elves, except with that grayish kind of skin, usually white hair and then red eyes. I don't know if Soye would know. Probably, I don't think Soye knows what these are, unless you want to make a nature check.
I rolled a 16.
Okay, you have never seen a creature like this before, but you've heard of them. These are called the Duergar. They are, yeah, sort of the darker version of dwarves. So they are evil, and they live underground and in large settlements. Underdark politics aren't very familiar to Soye, but you know, like, the drow have something to do. They're like, at war with the Duergar. You're like, you don't really know where they stand, but they're evil and they live underground is the big need to know.
Okay. Well, then, I think they're called the, did you say Durg?
Duergar.
Oh, Duergar.
Duergar.
Okay. I think there's a small little outpost of those, or camp of those guys, right over this hill, and they're mining something, or... they didn't seem like they were ready to take anyone on, so maybe we go around them, or, I don't know, what do you think of this, Sothris?
I think we are searching for an underground cavern, and this looks like an entrance into it.
Yeah, when you did your astral projection, didn't you see a bunch of Duergar who are mining for the drow? I mean, it's pretty common that drow take them as slaves.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I guess so.
I think you found exactly what we're looking for.
All right, then.
So, Celeste, I mean, we're about to go underground, so it's nice and pitch black in there, but it's probably getting dark as well. So we have, refresh me, we have a dwarf, an elf, a tiefling, and Soye is human?
A human.
All right, so he will kind of glance at her for a second and say, do you have any capability to see in the dark without external light?
I do have a globe that glows.
Orb of light.
Right. We can use that then.
And, you know, I'm fiery.
Yeah. Okay.
He cracks a half smile.
Oh. Well.
Yeah.
What's the plan?
I mean, they know we're here.
I can always just, I don't know, sneak around. If anyone else is sneaky too, I'll do better this time. And I'll just maybe take out some of the and guys at the entrance, if there are anyone guarding. Is anyone guarding?
Celeste, is there any light in the tunnel at all, or is it pitch black?
You do see that there are those two braziers of fairy fire.
Oh, right,
they're braziers. Just right there at the front. So that extends at least 30 feet of light, though you're really not sure how far that might go in the tunnel.
All right. If they're waiting or watching for us, it's going to be very difficult to sneak through this tunnel entrance, but we can try.
And I mean, we might not have to fight them.
Perhaps not.
Said Kara?
You know, they're family.
My dark cousins.
But they're cousins. Working with your enemies. Well, I guess if they're slaves of your enemies, never mind.
Any dwarf that is in slavery, she will seek to help to unfetter them.
Liberation! And
Kara, breaker of chains!
Yeah, it just turns into Rogue One. And all of a sudden, you start freeing everyone, all the slaves and robots.
Yes.
Wait, where'd the robots come in? Hang on.
As they did in Rogue One, all of a sudden, the end of the movie turns into a revolution. Another revolution within a revolution.
Excellent. Yeah, all right. So what's the plan? Tell me.
Soye, do you wish to try and sneak in ahead?
Yeah, why not?
I'll accompany you if you don't mind.
Oh, please do.
All right, so he draws his thin, long blade, and the blade hums with this almost chime-like sound, and it doesn't have, a basket hilt, but it does have these kind of counter-curling cross guards that guard his hand that look like copper tubes of some sort, and it's like they're chiming when he moves the blade around, and it kind of slowly goes quiet after he draws it.
Ooh.
Shall we?
Let's do it. I'll put my mask on.
Right.
Nice.
I'm going to cast Mage Armor.
Me, some stealth checks.
Let's sneak forward, and I'll look back at the remaining maidens, and I'll say, give us a 30 count, and then follow.
Thumbs up.
All right. So let's go.
Stealthy, I got a 19.
Ooh, hoo-hoo. Ooh, nice. 24.
Wow, look at this. Stealthy babies. So you continue forward, and you sneak down into this bowl-like area. Again, just listening and watching out for any sign, any sound that these Duergar might be coming back, but nothing comes to your ears. So you continue forward into this tunnel. And you see here, it's pretty wide on the inside, enough so that they can comfortably pass these carts in and out. And you could probably stand, I don't know, maybe five people at a time moving through here. But it does grow very, very dark the further you go. And you take a steep decline. You're clearly heading downwards into the heart of this hill.
All right. So I'll whisper over to Soya. Can your globe create dim light?
Yes, I can. Take it out and have a low firefly glow start.
Yeah, definitely. So it's, kind of hovering by you.
Yeah, if you can keep it candlelight, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Do you want me to, have it be floating ahead of us?
No, it'll give us away. Just enough so that you can see where you're going so you don't walk off of a cliff.
For sure. It's hovering closer to the ground so we can see our steps.
Perfect.
So you're continuing creeping forward. Maidens, that 30 count has elapsed. Yep. Are you creeping in?
Yeah.
Kara can only count to 10.
So
so she does three 10 counts? Yeah.
One, two, okay, let's go.
Close enough, that's fine.
Farrah and Arnadel trail a little bit behind because they're finishing up their count. They're like, oh, she's gone.
Oh shit. Okay, yeah. All right.
Oh shit, it's on.
So the three of you give me stealth checks as you also step into this tunnel.
I love this disadvantage.
21.
Oh, that is a 16 and a natural 20. Nice. So that is an 18.
Wow, okay. We're very sneaky this episode. I'm digging it.
I got a 12.
A 12? Okay.
Okay.
And Farrah?
I got a 21.
Okay.
Ooh.
So it's okay. As you all are moving down this tunnel, and eventually Sothras and Soye, the floor finally levels out after feeling like you've been heading in this descent for just eternity, as your heart rates are up and you are listening and you're hyper aware and just in complete darkness other than this small floating globe of light. The cavern opens up in front of you. And you see that you are standing on this large rocky shelf at this point, and you can see that there are abandoned mining carts left around you. There are piles of tools. And in the center of the room here, Saye, this is all feeling very deja vu to you as you are looking here. There is this huge pillar that travels from the floor to the ceiling of this room. You all are standing up at the highest point of this cavern, but the cavern stretches down and down for stories and stories. And it is completely silent as you are standing in this huge, echoey chamber, looking down at this ominous, black, crystalline pillar in the center of this room. And then suddenly there's a shift in the air. Something happens and all the hairs stand up on the back of your neck as something feels very, very wrong.
A little quieter, please.
All of a sudden. And you see that walking up this balcony's edge, from one of the lower points, there is a woman. And she is clearly a drow. So she's got, yeah, that grayish skin and those red eyes, and her hair is kind of hanging limply. And she's, like, stepping towards you, but swaying and, like, jerking in strange ways, like someone who maybe has doesn't know how to walk like a normal person. And, yeah, she continues upwards and turns to all of you. Why have you come here? You are not welcome. And she, like, hangs her head sort of off to the side and is staring and is absolutely not blinking.
This isn't weird at
Does
all.
Does she seem to be, like, physical? Like, corporeal? Does she have a body? Is she crunching the gravel and all that good stuff when she steps?
She has a body.
I mean.
She's definitely here. It's just, like, this weird sense, like she doesn't know how...
to use it. Like a reanimated corpse? I want to use my.
We're not there.
Oh, you're not there. You're
I thought we were
up.
All here. Sorry.
So yeah, she just walked right up to us. We didn't manage to sneak up on her. All right.
And she seems to be the only living thing in this cavern.
Living thing. What race is she again?
She looks like a drow.
A drow. Okay. Interesting.
And she's speaking in common. Sorry, I'm not there.
She is speaking in common.
Well, I'll kind of glance over to Soya to see if she has anything she wants to say right off the bat.
Oh.
And this thing, like, kind of hangs ahead to the side. It's not bothering to hold it up as it looks at you.
Well, we're just looking for some friends that have gone missing from nearby camps.
Ah, well, if they're your friends, you can join them in the pits as well. And she looks at you and the red eyes begin to blink and, like, shift. And it's like her flesh becomes wax as she looks at you. And the whole guise of, like, a human with the two arms and legs starts to, like, melt and become this yellowish wax. And you see that the two eyes sort of form together into these large lamp-like orbs. And this thing is standing there in front of you that looks like a melting candle of wax. And this stench is radiating off of this creature as it throws out one of these, like, acidic arms towards you. And that's where we're going to call it for today.
Oh, no! Oh, my God. Is that what I think it is?
Probably, if you've read the drow part of your books, kids. Oh my gosh!
Gross!
Yay! Yeah, it's super gross. Super gross. We're gonna get in some really fun stuff next game. So thank you so much, Dan, for joining us. Dan will be back next episode as well, since we clearly
absolutely
have some business to contend with. But thank you all so much for coming by. I have been Celeste Conowich, your dungeon master.
I've been your moon elf warlock, Arnadelithil, played by Brittany.
I am Katie, and I have been your tiefling sorcerer with a pebble in her shoe for 2 miles.
No!
The worst.
Ugh. I'm Nassim. I've been your shaky human monk, Sayonur.
And I am Sage, about to be your raging barbarian, Kara Brynhilda.
And I'm Dan, your guest Eladrin wizard. That's right. That's what I'm playing.
Yeah. And you're a wizard, cool. Sathras.
I'm a wizard.
And Dan, where can people go to find you on the internet? Tell the people who you are, what you do in the wide world.
Oh, sure. Well, my big thing is I am a game designer at Wizards of the Coast on the D&D team. So I get to write all of this crazy BS. And I'm on Twitter at Dan_Dylan_1. Super creative, I know. And yeah, so reach out there. I love talking about D&D and answering questions and hearing about your awesome games. I love it.
I'm a huge...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of the work that you did for the, like, Deep Magic series with all the...
Thank you so much. I loved working on that stuff. I love working on everything for Kobold. They're the best. And I'm also a DM on the Kobold Press Twitch channel for The World Tree Burns, which is on Tuesdays at 8 Eastern.
Sweet.
Yeah. And of course, this is Venture Maidens. If you don't know who we are, why are you here? No, but we love that you're here.
Did you get lost, stranger?
Oh, shoot. Follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, at Venture Maidens. If you like the show, if you enjoyed what you saw here, also maybe consider supporting us on Patreon. We have recently partnered with Drop the Die, JB Little, who is amazing, to start making items from the world of Venture Maidens. So actually, ooh, this Sunday, you can go, and if you donate, you can get Saye's wings that she has. So you can go and get that PDF. We also have a D&D Beyond edition. So if you donate, you can pick up these dang cool sweet items. But yeah, thank you again so much for stopping by. And until next time,
venture
away, everybody.
Hello, dear listeners. Thank you so much for listening to another spicy episode of the Venture Maidens podcast. Before saying goodbye for today, let's talk about one of our favorite sponsors, Elderwood Academy, who are a group of artisans that create amazing gaming products, including dice towers, dice trays, dice boxes, deck boxes, dice, and more. All products are crafted to look like spellbooks, scroll cases, codexes, and other awesome fantasy gear that we love. Speaking of which, their spellbooks, which are bespoke gaming boxes crafted to embody the ancient arcane tomes right out of your campaign. Your spellbook is carved from a single block of hardwood, bound in timeless real leather, centuries-old foil, pressed art out of your choosing. Natural living materials mean that each spellbook is completely unique. Nothing is factory made. And they are accented with a real metal dry erase board, which means you can take notes of your choosing, keep track of what spells you've used, things like that. And your choice of removable foam insert cut to your needs, which means if you want to keep your dice in your box, you can cut your foam to a dice set. Keep your dry erase marker in there. Keep your spell cards in there. It's completely custom, every inch of this thing. So please go check this out and their other amazing products on their website, elderwoodacademy.com/don't split. One more time. That's elderwoodacademy.com/don't split. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in the next episode. Venture away.